All right, what's up, everybody? It's Tommy Runs, and this is the Relay Podcast. I'm here with my friends Matt Chittum, Peter Bromka, a little bit of Kafuzi, and a little bit of me also underwater for about 3 to 4 minutes until Matt called me out for having a terrible mic situation. So please bear with us. We fixed it. We moved on. But in this episode, we talked about major big marathons versus like the smaller kind of backyard marathons, the ones that kind of you just roll up to and have some fun and really go for a good time, or those big major marathons with the crazy energy, and like how we compare those and compare and contrast to see what's good, what's bad, and what we all like. So at the end of this, though, listen all the way through, but make sure you let us know how you feel about which majors, which marathons you'd rather, the small or big ones. Yeah, we had some fun here, so tune in, and we are about to go deep on marathons. How you doing, man?
I'm getting my voice back. from Eugene.
I feel like I just saw you. It's almost too soon to see you again. I mean, not in a bad way, but it's just like, you know, your energy is so high that it's like I can't do this too many days in a row. But it's good to see you from a distance, Peter.
Yeah, this How is you doing, Matt? This is the space we appreciate.
Yeah, we like this.
Peter
like
and Eugene. This. I mean, basically, like these are like these new shirts instead of the Stop Pre shirt. I think we need a Stop Peter shirt. He's like the, when I was in Eugene with him, it was like every third person knew who he was. I'm not even sure if some of those people were even running the marathon.
I mean, I grew up here. These are my people.
You know, like have you ever seen like a couch, like outside of a living room, like on the street somewhere, you know, like it kind of just stands out. Like, why is that couch out here? That's what like it feels like seeing Peter in the world in general. It's like, why is this couch right here? And then you see him in Eugene and it's absolutely like, oh, the couch is in the living room. It's where he's supposed to be.
Where he's supposed to be. Tommy had me on as the closeout of his two-day live show at the Eugene Expo, which was super fun. But I definitely felt, tell me if this is correct, Tommy, I felt some energy of like, Keenan, like, we have to stay on the rails. Like, we only have a few minutes and we need to actually do a real interview. And I kept looking at him like, I could say like these three things and just throw them off like a typical Relay episode. But I'm like, no. We are doing a real interview. Yeah. It was hard, but I think we pulled it off.
I think you did a good job. I feel like I was like just waiting for you to like do like a Peter thing where it's like next thing you know, we're all just like talking about something totally different. I'm all for that, honestly. Like I would totally be ready for that, those shenanigans. But then at the same time, like we were trying to do like our 15-minute like windows and keep it moving and close out the show for the day. So maybe another time, Peter. We'll have you on for like a longer period so we can really get to go. Aaron actually spoke very highly of you afterwards because he knew of you and stuff like that, but then like he didn't know that you were the Marathon Owes You Nothing guy because he had heard it before and all this other stuff. Like, and he's like, oh, I really like how you talked about who can out-chill everyone else, you know, and he really liked that part. So I'm like, oh, that was cool. It was like we had a good – and I wanted people that didn't know you that, like, you know, to, you know, hear about, like, more about, like, the real Peter.
Tell people about what you did, because I thought what was interesting is you had, like, a long lineup of guests, like, 10, 15 minutes at a time. And what I noticed was that you would go from someone who had, like, everyone had a good story to tell, but some people were more, like, you know, runners that you had invited because you knew they had a story. And then, like, the next person would be someone who just, to say it frankly, like was really good at storytelling, really good on camera. Mm-hmm. That woman who she's a host with the WWE.
Megan Morant was on the show. Yeah,
like you're like, wait a second, this is a woman with a Nike running cap, but then she gets a microphone in her hand. You're like, what is going on here? Like I had no context, and then you're like just transfixed because she's an on-air, you know, famous personality, and she just really knows what she's doing. And so it was, you were balancing very different energies.
Megan was actually funny because, you know, I kind of knew her more for like the on-air personality side, and I knew she was with WWE and all that stuff. And I was very kind of like surprised, I think, as you were, like as she started to unfold that story. I mean, and she actually she ran a 2:45 and some change. Like her goal, she kept saying on the show, was like 2:50, but she was like kind of leaning towards that 2:45 mark. And so she took a big swing, finished third in the race, crushed it, had a great day. But yeah, Eugene actually, so just to kind of like recap what we did was, we kind of did that TR, like what PR Project did at TRE, which was like have a big lineup of guests, like back to back 15 minutes, each guest, and just kind of move right through them. We did it for 2 hours on Friday in the expo, right outside, like in this living room type of setup. So it was like kind of like you're just like sitting there watching some folks talk in a living room. We had 2 hours on Friday and 2 hours on Saturday. And so people were just be kind of walking by, traffic's kind of flowing. A lot of people would come sit down and chat or talk as people were sharing their stories. And Eugene actually put the list together because they had already had like, you know, start line stories, which is really cool that Eugene does. And I think that some of the like the bigger marathons don't necessarily have time really to do something like this, where they went through and had a bunch of different what they call start line stories of like people that are coming to the race that submitted their stories to be shared. And they kind of highlighted those obviously. So they were some of the first guests, but then also some of them were like more like influencers or content creators or like, you know, run club leaders that were going to be there that Eugene knew about. So they filled the schedule for us, which is great. Cause I think it takes away like the bias of like, if we were to schedule it, like you were the only person that we scheduled, Peter. So it was like, everybody else was like people that the race already knew were going to be there and wanted to help tell their stories through the marathon story. But it was really great. It was really awesome. I couldn't have gone any better than it did. I think.
So Peter was the nepotism hire on this one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, 100%. I was like,
I'm gonna put you on the spot. Who was your favorite 15-minute spot? And who of the people that were in Oregon and Eugene that you didn't get to talk to, do you wish you could have talked to?
So Megan Morant was definitely my favorite 15-minute spot, just because she told two stories that like literally had people like on the edge of their seats. Like, I was sitting there like, how does this story end? You know, like she would literally was.
If I told you that this woman told a story about her sophomore year 2 mile, you'd be like, Snoozeville. But we were like,
edge of seat. Oh,
cool. So great.
Like, I had chills when she got done with the story. And she went over a time and I wasn't going to stop her. So it is what it is. But yeah, she did great. She was great. I hope that I hope to be able to get her on like my show eventually one day, because it was awesome. Like she has a really great story outside of, she balanced a very demanding job with like training for a great number, in the marathon for her. And then someone I didn't get on the show, who I wanted on the show was Allie Feller. She was there. She did her interview with Emily. I can't remember. Was it?
Helnon.
I was going to say Emily Sweats, but I know that's not her real name. That's her Instagram name. She interviewed the author, and then a huge crowd for that. Huge. And but they had a line of course, like for book signings and then pictures with Allie. And you can imagine that line was very long. I think the line lasted maybe an hour. So she was
2 hours, just people lined up buying books.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. No. And she was tired, and I saw her kind of look over once the line like was done, and she kind of looked over a little bit. And then she was gone. Like she was like, I had to go. It was too much. She was like, it was too much. Like, I mean, cause like the show was an hour long itself. So she was like on for 3 hours straight. And she hit me up afterwards. Like, hey, I'm sorry I couldn't make it. But I'm like, no, I totally get it. Cause I wouldn't want to be sitting in my show either if I did 3 hours straight of like, you know, all that stuff. But it was amazing though. Eugene, in general was great. And I'm gonna try to go back in some capacity, whether I'm running or working, every time.
Definitely fun.
Yeah.
The I had not been to an Allie live show, which was funny for a bunch of reasons, but funny because it seemed as though a lot of the audience listens to many of her podcasts. And so they are very aware of all of these inside jokes around, she can just say stuff and I'm like, oh, ha. And then the crowd's like, reacts in a way. I'm like, oh, wait, I only sort of get this. I get this at some like basic level. And then, oh, now I'm blanking on it, but she referenced, Emily used some word, which the crowd knew was the word that Allie got bumped out of in a middle school spelling bee competition. Cool. And so like, and I'm like, what is going on? And then Allie filled us in of like, oh, the crowd knows that that's like one of my pet peeve words. So it's just like, there's a lot of excitement. And I think the whole vibe for a Saturday afternoon is a really nice way to, you know, feel the energy. We've done that at CIM sometimes. Like people are nervous and they're like looking to engage, but they know they shouldn't do too much. So I really like these activities that are becoming more popular. There was a whole station where you could make
like, yeah, beaded bracelets. Yeah, that was like, cool. With your kids were everywhere making these things. They had set stations everywhere. And I think that's cool, like what you're saying, Peter, too, is like sometimes like you'll come to some of these expos and you'll pass by like a talk going on about like in London we passed by they were talking about like carb loading and not bonking in the marathon on Saturday. And I'm like, that seems a little intense. Like, how you're telling me not to bonk in a marathon on Saturday? Like, that was the title of it. How to bonk, whatever. And I'm like, and then when you see like on the flip side, it's like what you guys did in CIM and then my living room setup or our living room setup for PR project. And, you know, Allie's thing, like they weren't talking about tips to run the marathon, or we weren't either. It's just like conversations that make people feel kind of like at home in those wild moments when you're super nervous.
Yeah, my friend, the doctor was making, all the doctors were making bracelets that said PR or ER. Okay, so they were like, we're going for it.
And hopefully no one ended up in the ER.
They should do the opposite, Tommy, where it's like, how to bonk at a marathon. I think I'm going to do this on the Rambling Runner. I'm going to be like, my key eight ways to bonk at a marathon. Right? Like, if you're thinking about bonking,
this is what you do with that, Matt. Don't put that on Rambling Runner. Make a reel. A quick reel talking about the eight ways to bonk in a marathon. Drop a reel on the Rambler Runner Instagram.
See, this is why you're the social media maven. See, I wouldn't even think to do that.
Wouldn't that do well, Mike?
It'll do a lot better that way, because then it's just a quick hit, boom, rather than doing a whole long conversation.
It's like a
Saturday Night Live sketch that goes too long. You know, if you did it like an actual long form episode, it'd be too long. But like social media.
So don't go Joe Rogan with that. No 4 hours, 30 minutes on each topic.
No.
Like if you're going to have a nutritionist actually there and talk about like, and here's how you fix it. The structure.
Just going all the way into the pit.
But if you're just doing it as like a fun like bit, then social media, make it fast.
Make it quick.
40 seconds.
Yep. And the people will be like in the comments talking about, oh my gosh, I did all eight of these yesterday. You know what I mean? But yeah, no, you should do that. But no, it was great. Like I liked it a lot, and it's definitely since there's all the stuff that I've been doing lately and like out in the world and stuff. It was definitely a cool transition to be in like a Eugene as opposed to like a London or whatever.
Yeah, how would you classify Eugene in terms of like the size of the marathon? Because I'm thinking about like, you know, you have. Obviously, you have the majors, and you have like the ones that are equal in size, like Philly and LA, right? Marine Corps, right? They're absolutely enormous. But Eugene isn't like a grassroots marathon, right? It's not like one of those really small ones. It's kind of like in the middle. It's like, how do you classify it in your head when you're thinking about races like that or similar to that?
I mean, I guess if I had to put like if majors were like a class A and then like the, what you, you know, CIM and all that stuff was like a class B side, like size wise, I think it would be like a C, I guess. It's not like it's very well put together. Like none of these, it's just size wise. It's just a smaller thing. It's a smaller city. I think that they're working on trying to figure out like what their capacity is. I don't think they've hit it really. I think they just kind of base their capacity on, you know, how many medals they ordered based on like how many people registered last year. They did sell out this year too, so that's good. So there'll probably be more people next year. But there is something to be said about like the size of the streets in Eugene too. Like, I don't think you can have 15,000 people running at the same time in some of those streets, because they're going through residential areas for sure. But I feel like it's probably one of the better. It's probably one of the most well put together races of that size that I've ever seen. And that kind of, they do a really good job at like carrying the Eugene name along with that too, because that's a big city to have like a marathon or a race in general, and not bring like the high quality that someone would expect to be like in Tracktown, USA, you know. So I think it's a smaller race, but it's done so well.
Yeah, for sure. And there's a couple of those, like Richmond, I think, is another one. Which is maybe I'm kind of going off the dome here with you know, picking ones out, but it's interesting because I know we want to talk today about like some of the differences between like going to like and running in a major marathon, whether that's an actual one of the six majors or one of those that are like similar in scope and size but just don't have that title, as opposed to like the grassroots marathons, right? The ones that are like pretty local to you, the ones where like you can pick up your bib like 90 minutes before the start.
Yeah.
Right. The stuff like that. Right. All the, where you can make it just like a one day thing. Even if you live like 2 hours away, it's like, all right, I get there, I get the bib, I do a little shakeout and I go, kind of like how you would treat a 5K in a sense. And, you know, I think a lot of these races have so many, so many differentiating factors, but like they're all awesome. But I think that they can be great for different reasons. And I know for me, like as someone who's like looking at a fall marathon, I keep kind of juxtaposing some of them in my mind and comparing and contrasting, like, what do I want out of this experience? And figuring that out before I make my final decision. So I guess I'm posing this question completely selfishly because I want to figure it out for myself on which one to choose or the path to go down.
You got some thoughts, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been to Eugene, but I get the sense that it's probably like about the size of like a grandma's maybe, and probably smaller. And both of those I think are smaller than say like Indy as far as like races to go to. But yeah, I mean, like I feel like grandma's is one where it's like it'll sell out grandma's for sure. But like it's not something where you necessarily need a lottery for that race. So you can get a bib if you want a bib. You might have to plan a little bit further ahead of time. And then the expo, you could be in and out in 30 minutes if you want. But also like it's a small enough race where like anything that you might want to see running wise and events wise is probably going to happen at the expo and not like some like offsite location. And maybe there's some brands activating, but there aren't a ton. So it's kind of like you can kind of see everything you want to see come in, get everything really quickly. Those are well-organized races. And then if you want to get out and just relax, you can be out and relax. And then like sometimes like the rest of the city doesn't even know there's an event happening, you know? And so like, if you want something more low key, maybe you've had some big races and the pressure of everything got to you, you know, then I feel like these are really great ways to just kind of like come in, do work, and then go home with a shiny new PB.
Yeah, I think it's like just a quick look. I think they had 3,033 finishers in the marathon for Eugene. I mean, so it's not a lot, but it's definitely, it just doesn't feel like a grassroots. It kind of really is a grassroots, I guess, if you think, because they're growing each year. But they just do it so well. It just doesn't feel, they don't make themselves feel like a small race. But I feel like the Aaron and Ern, my friend Aaron and Ern just did a more of like a grassroots race here in Michigan. And one of the reasons why they did is because it's close by. They don't have to worry about all the travel. They don't have to worry about, like, because you have to factor in like the fatigue of traveling in different time zones and, you know, different countries or whatever. And they wanted just to be able to like step out the door, drive to the race, like you said, pick up their bib right first thing in the morning, and then just relax and run the race. And I think that that's definitely a plus if you're okay with like a smaller like crowd, you know, because a lot of, some people really like thrive off like bigger crowds. And if you're one of those people, then going to like a race that doesn't have many spectators could be an issue, you know, after a certain mile point when you really need like some of the extra energy. But if you're okay with that and you do a lot of your training work and you think that you're fine and you don't like the big crowds, then smaller races may be like perfect for like a goal race. So you can just zone out, do your thing, and then just run hard, you know. And some people ran really well in Eugene too. And like, it's a really quiet race once you're all alone leading, or, you know, up front or somewhere like that. So, you know, people run well in different situations, and I think you just have to figure out which one is yours. And if you can manage like the major marathon, like hustle and bustle and all that stuff, and trying to stay off your feet and find places to eat, and still have a really good time and a really good race with a big crowd, then that's a huge plus to be able to do.
And I feel like the cost is a big thing too, right? It's going to cost you a fraction to do like your local race. I mean, mainly just because of the travel and then like the lodging expenses, that becomes so much. And then like, if you're able to just race from home, you know, it's like, so nice, like all your meals, everything that you normally do is there. And so like, you know, the whole like race, like it's your regular long run day, you can really execute that very well. And I think for a lot of people, like it might be very intimidating to like get into marathoning because you're like, well, I do half marathons and I don't know if I want to do full. It just seems so expensive. You know, like do your local marathon. I mean, that'll be great. I mean, and your local marathon doesn't have to be like a 100 finisher race either, because that I think could be intimidating as well. But like my first marathon was Baltimore Running Festival, and I felt like that was a great first one because it was big enough to feel like a big, huge deal, but it was small enough where I didn't feel like overwhelmed by all the things that I wanted to do and see while I was there, and maximize kind of the expenses that I was putting down, time and travel and expense wise, you know?
For sure. I was watching Eric Floberg's Boston recap video. I think it was the part one of two. Because in the beginning, he's like, I'm going to do a 2-hour. He goes, I'm going to do a 1-hour video of what the weekend was like. I'm like, this video is 1 hour. Like, we got a lot of videos coming out. So, and it was like, again, I've never run Boston. It was amazing to me. Again, I know all about it. I've talked to so many people who run it, but seeing the detail he put into, it's like the first 20 minutes, he's at mile 2 of the race. Like, he's going through everything. It's like, wow, there is so much involved in this. And he goes, it's not that different from all the other marathon majors, I'm sure, to some degree. But it was like, wow, like, I can see why if people like can't control their emotions,
they would
be like gasped before they've even hit the starting line. To say nothing of like the preceding days.
Yeah, and I think that's why, like, if you break it into three as opposed to like that like grassroots, like, you know, merit, like, so like the Detroit Free Press is in like this one that Aaron just ran, was like the Martian race, where it's like, I don't know how many people finished the race, but it wasn't a ton, and it's a very quiet course, and it's not necessarily an easy course either. The Martian invasions. I've ran the half before, and it's really nice. It's cool, but it's just different. And then you have like the Detroit Free Press, which I don't even think. I mean, Detroit Free Press is a really big race. I'm not sure like where it stacks up in like size wise compared to like an Indy or like a CIM. I'm not really sure, but it's probably come somewhat close to that like category. So I feel like you got to break it into like three different ones. You got the big majors, or even like the big races though, because there are some really big marathons that aren't in the majors yet, or they're not considered a major. But then there's like that middle section that you could kind of get best of both worlds. And like, it's a little smaller, but the city comes out for it, you know, like Falmouth, like the Falmouth Road Race. It's not a marathon, but it's not a really big race. I don't think it's that 7-miler, but the people come out and they're like the whole way, you just have people in, like, they have come out of their houses to cheer people on. So if you can find that middle ground of like, okay, how can I not be by myself between mile like 18 and 25, you know, when I really need some energy? And then also, how can I, you know, and if I want to avoid, say, like a London, was legit consistent noise from, you know, mile for me, because I started in like the Yellow Corral, so it was a little different. It was kind of quiet in the beginning for us, but once you like merged with everyone else, it was consistent noise and cheers for a very long time. Like, and if you're not okay with that and you get hyped up and you surge a little bit every time somebody says like, you know, run fast or something, then maybe you should find like that middle ground race where it's like you get the best of both worlds.
I haven't run a marathon that was like that. I shouldn't say. I did do Hartford. Hartford was like that. Because Hartford, this was 2010. They had like there's a stretch when they kind of go north of the city and then come back down on this out and back section where they have like a band, like every mile. It's kind of like how like a rock and roll marathon.
Yeah.
Would be. But not the whole race, but just like in this section, but because it's an out and back, you see them coming both directions, which is kind of cool. So, that was fun, but like I've done Cape Cod and a couple other ones where it's like you mentioned, it is ghost town. Like during those critical, like, you know, when are you going to bonk kind of miles? Like you're out there by yourself. I remember I did a marathon like a year and a half ago and I didn't see anybody except for the people who were passing me when I was, even then there was like no one passing me. There wasn't many people out there. So it was like mile like 22, 23. I went down to like 10 minute pace. It was just kind of like doing a little walk run, you know, like just got to get through. Right. And then like, actually I don't know if you guys know him that well, but he's been on my podcast a bunch of times. He's really active on social media. Maurice Lohman, the marathon panda. He was at mile 25. He's like, he was waiting for me. He's like, come on. It was like such a jolt of energy. I'm like, I need more of this. I need more of this during these hard miles.
And then, and I guess another thing too, like when you're talking about like the crowd from a different perspective is like, what's your family like situation set up like? Like who's coming to cheer for you? You know, because so like if you're in, like my mom was like, I'm going to be at mile 13 on the bridge in London. So that should be fine. Like in my mind, I'm like, I'll see her. Not a chance. It was six rows deep of people on both sides of the bridge. I don't even know that bridges have sidewalks big enough for this.
Like, it was people standing up on pillars and things, everything. It was people everywhere on that bridge. So it's like, if you have someone that's coming to see you that isn't going to be able or want to or whatever, push through and do these things and scream as loud as possible to get your attention, maybe don't take them to a place that, like, they would come all the way to see you and not be able to see you, you know? So it's like, you got to think about all these things too, because, you know, in like when my mom was in, I mean, this is, it sounds like it's kind of a privileged moment to speak, but like in Tokyo, in like, it was a totally different experience. It was also a major, but it was so different. Like, I could hear her breathe on the side. Like, oh, is that my mom breathing? You know, because it was just such a different atmosphere. So like, you got to take that in consideration too, because if you're bringing like wife and kids or husband and mom and parents and this and that, maybe like, okay, let's pick a different race for you guys to come to, because I'd love to be able to like enjoy this with you and see you and, you know, whatever.
That's how Boston is for my family. They've come to races that are smaller, and they like, I can high five my son. I can, my wife has been able to jump in the car and go to a bunch of spots. And so then when I get to Boston, people are like, oh, is your family going to be here? And I'm like, well, I mean, it's very exciting, but it's not really a family event in the classic sense. I think for a lot of people, it's being there in a culminating moment, but it's less interaction. It's less like, I see you, I'm excited. So I think there's good directions both ways, but yeah, you definitely saw, I mean, out in Eugene, I saw people out there, you know, with signs, with their whole family lined up with like, you know, almost a cheer tunnel. And you're like, this is rad. I'm not sure where else you do this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you, one of the things I like about grassroots marathons is I love running through neighborhoods. I just think it's a more fun running experience. I feel like if I'm just going on like just a straight ribbon of road, even if it's a really nice road, I just like, it's just, I, part of me likes to zone out, but I think it can get a little, ugh. Yeah, just it's a, I'd rather have a little bit more action going on with my running. So like when I do these smaller races, I think one of the things that I've liked is going through neighborhoods. I find it super enjoyable. Also, I think it also allows people to come watch in a way that it's a little bit more organic, right? So people just like walking outside their house, cheering, then going back inside, right? As opposed to like, all right, I got to drive to this place and then I might cheer, or I might not. So I think those kind of experiences have always been great. Like, again, I just prefer to run in those neighborhoods. And I think the viewing experience can be a little different. Like, there's a race, a super popular race here in Rhode Island every, I think it's the last Friday in July every year. It's called the Blessing of the Fleet. And it's an extremely popular New England race. So it's a 10-mile race. And it's, again, it's the last Friday in July. So it's super hot. It's at 5 p.m. It's baking hot. So there's part of it that goes on like a highway, and that is no fun at all. But there's other parts that are going like through like really residential neighborhoods, like roads that you would never pick out for a race. But this is like a race course that's been around forever. And it's like people are just, it feels like crazy. It's absolutely nuts. There's three people lined up on each side of the road. People plan their parties around it. It's like it's almost like a 4th of July parade, and we're the parade. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, they have like these huge like water fountains they'll set up for like going over the top of the street. Like, it's a really wild situation. But you would never be like, oh, this is going to be the crazy part.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, oh, I'm on Herring Road for like a quarter mile. Then I'm taking a right on Hemlock Street or something. Well, you know what I mean? But it's like, boom, there you go.
I was thinking about that because Eugene is this, not to keep talking about Eugene, but like it's in between. It's not the flattest and fastest. It's not you know, the CIMs of the world were built for speed, and it's not the craziest, either the biggest or the hardest. So it's in this pretty common, like, middle ground. It's quick, but it's not the fastest. And so I think there's a lot of fun in having the local race that you're doing your training, you're working hard, like you're growing as a runner, and you show up to your local thing and you do better. You try to do better than you have before. And you try to like run maybe with some athletes that you didn't think you could be in the past. And that's just sort of like classic running. Like, most runners are like, well, I'm trying to, it's the wintertime, I'm going to be try to be a little bit fitter for the spring races that I do. I've seen your photos from Blessing of the Fleet, and it looks just like god awful humidity.
But my number rubbed off. It got so hot and like I was dumping like water on myself that like the number from my arm motion back and forth, it rubbed off half of the number.
Man, that's not fun at all, man.
I mean, I don't know if that's, but I mean, that's like the, what's the Beach to Beacon in Maine, where everyone's like, you got to come. And I'm like, it looks really
like a Sufferfest, but okay.
Falmouth is the same way.
Yeah, Falmouth's the same way, yeah. Falmouth is always hot. I mean, it's fun. It's only 7 miles, though, too, so it's like, it's kind of over, but it is tough, very tough.
It's kind of over.
Well, it's kind of like, it's like that threshold pace. It's like, you know, like how fast can you run in an hour? It's like, well, no one ever does that. It's like, unless you run Falmouth, then you might be doing it.
Then you're just suffering.
For sure. And I think one of the things that I like about and I say grassroots races, oftentimes it's like synonymous with local races, right? You're not going to come to like travel 2,000 miles to do a marathon with 150 people. You know what I mean? Like, so for most people, grassroots essentially means one of their local races. And I think one of the nice things is training on the course can be.
I was going to ask you about this.
Can
what
be really
think?
Fun. I really enjoy that. So I've always liked scouting stuff. Like when I was a college basketball coach, like I loved scouting. It was always one of my things. When I've done trail races, I love to go out and see, like, what are these trails like? Like I can see what it looks like on a map, but like, is this runnable? Are there rocks everywhere? Like what is this actually like? And I think the same thing for, especially for marathons, like it's like, we've all had this experience when you're like driving in the car of like, if it's your first time driving somewhere, it feels longer than it actually is because everything is new. So I always be like, I'm always thinking like, is running going to be the same way? Like if I've done this stretch of road before, I'm not going to have that experience.
I have a, like the Newport Marathon in Rhode Island where my in-laws live on the course. I have it on my list of like, I'd like to get out there because I've covered a lot of the course over the last decade. Just like on Christmas trips, summer trips, you know, I've covered it in all different conditions. And I'm like, I can't tell if it's going to help me or just be like, oh no, I know how long this stretch is and this is going to be rough.
Well, I think it's good if you're struggling because you're like, I know how long this hill is. I know, like, you're not like, all right, good grief. Like, I'm on this incline. There's a turn up here. Is the hill keep going? After this turn, I have no idea. Or is it just like level off, right? But if you've done the course, you'd be like, all right, no, if I get to this turn, I'm going to be okay. So I can kind of grin and bear it. That's also a tough race. Aaron, Tommy, your friend Aaron's done that race before. In every, I think like 4 out of 5 years is like torrential rain and wind. Like it is the race photos of the Newport Marathon are always horrific. It's like they don't put a lot of those on the, on the, on the website to get people to sign up.
That was his that was his first marathon.
Oh God!
and you're just like, but it was actually like a perfect day.
Oh, good for him! I remember the year before he went, I was like, "Oh God, Aaron, don't look at the photos. Save yourself."
Yeah, no, it was actually a perfect day for them, and he actually like last minute was like, "I'm going for sub 3" because like he was going for like 305 ish or whatever, and he was like super on target for it too. And then like I guess at the end of Newport, like they throw in like a random huge hill like at mile 24 or something like that, and he was just like, yep, that's where it went left. And I mean, he wasn't like upset about it because his goal was not really to break three, but he was actually on target, like he was rolling really well.
Peter, I'm imagining that's like up from Atlantic Beach Club, like Atlantic Beach Club up to Newport. I bet that's probably where it was.
I gotta do it someday. I mean, because it's just like at some point like a course starts to kind of haunt you, like, oh, are you afraid?
And I think the other thing too, and I mentioned this like in passing, but for me, it's like such a benefit is if you can find a race that you can actually get the bib the morning of.
Just
like,
roll
it's
up.
It's huge. Like, no, because like I'm looking at, so here's some examples, right? So I live in Rhode Island where I'm looking at potential races. Like there's one in Hartford, which is about an hour and a half away from me. There's another one in Lowell, which is like an hour and a half away from me. Cape Cod, same thing. And then there's a local Rhode Island race. And it's like, well, if I have to go get the bib the day before, like I'm not gonna stay over at these races the day before. Like they're just close enough where like I would want to probably like sleep in my own bed and drive in. But then like it's like basically the day before, the whole day is me just driving to this place, getting my bib, and then driving home.
No.
So it's like, how do you? So like if I could find, so I think there's not gonna be a lot of races like this because it has to be really small, right? To do same day bib pickup. Kind of like how you do it at 5K, but it would be like that for me. That'd be like the one. But that might be too choosy.
The Erie Marathon, way too choosy. And in Pennsylvania was one of the ones I did in 2022, and that was like I didn't do the walk up in the morning of. I might as well have the way that morning went for me. I missed the start because I forgot my shoes at the top of the hill, so I had to run back up the hill.
Oh yeah,
I had to run back up the hill in UFO slides. It was like maybe like a half mile or so. Go back up to the car, change, try to calm myself down, jog back down the hill. And then by the time I got back down, like halfway down the hill, I could hear that everybody was starting. Like they started, the gun went off and everything. So I just took my time. Like I used a porta potty. Then I just like slowly walked up, stretch, and then the last person to cross the start line. So I might as well have just, you know, planned it to get my bib. But yeah, they have a cool setup. Like everything's right on there on that peninsula. So it was like, literally you could just walk up in the morning with all your stuff, and the race is literally just two loops on this really big peninsula down there. And it was actually really nice. Mm-hmm. And those are the vibe. That's a really cool vibe though. And if you can find a race like that, that is very small, but they like the volunteers at every aid station have like parties. They try to vote to see who has the best aid station. And so like you have these really quiet moments throughout, but every aid station gets really hype, you know, and they have it every mile or so. So it's like, it's not as, it's like that small race with the super quiet that somehow meets party city. You know what I'm saying?
I like that.
And I think also you can extend this out to even on the trail side of things. Like we just saw the Canyons 100K and 100 mile and 50K this weekend, which is a UTMB race. So like you get all the pomp and circumstance that comes with something like that. And then, but then you get the opposite too, right? Obviously this trail's a little different because mm-hmm. like the yeah. cheering sections are going to be way different, right? You're out there in the middle of the woods. But at the same time, like there's a trail series in New Jersey, in like in Southern New York, a little bit New York, but mostly New Jersey. It's called Sasquatch Trail Races. So kind of like based off Sasquatch. Anyway, this is great. So if you go to their website, you're going to be confused for a second because they don't have like a races tab. The tab is called Trail Parties. So all their races are called trail parties instead of races. And that's the vibe they bring to it. It's like, we're out here to have fun. Obviously, you want to go there. You want to run well and all that stuff. But that's like, basically their point is like, that's already inferred, right? We know you're going to run hard. We don't have to like amplify that. So we're going to amplify the fun part. So it's like, the vibe is great. Like I've done a couple of trail races around here in Rhode Island, but I did one ultra and it was one of their races. And it was a brutal day, mud everywhere. Like it was snowing at the start and all this stuff. But it was like the vibes were like great. There's just a great, great group of people. And like this is a classic example of like that grassroots feel where you can, like you just mentioned, Tommy at Erie, is that it also allows you to do things that are a little more creative without any like downstream negative effects, right? Because it's so small, you can actually like dial in those kinds of things, which is really fun. So like if someone's listening to this and they're a race director or an aspiring race director, and like I feel like if you have a grassroots race, it's kind of like having like a podcast no one listens to. Like there's no downside of trying new things. You're not alienating people who aren't part of it because no one's a part of it.
Start some new traditions. Like the Eugene 5K where they race the flapjack. You know,
I love that. Man.
Yeah, it's a fun wrinkle. Have we talked about Joe yet?
I mean, we haven't talked about Joe, but and then Joe doesn't listen to running podcasts, so we could talk about Joe as much as we want to right at this moment. Yeah, Joe bit off more than he could chew, and I'm not talking about four stacks of a flapjack. He ran London and was like, you know, I'm gonna go up to Eugene, and you know, I'm gonna beat the flapjack. I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't know, bro. It's gonna be a tough.
If we're going to call him out, let's call him out. His name's Joe Robinson. Yep.
Go, he's from go Detroit, check him out. Joe Michigan. Robinson APX. It's at Joe Robinson APX. Go hit him up and ask him about the flapjack loss.
Let me just say, I was standing with like just 100 meters before the track. So like three.
Oh, you saw him. You saw his heart
right behind the. And I was like, you got to go. You got to go.
He had nothing for the flap.
And I looked at the results, like, he clearly found the gear, right? Like, he's a fit man. He's, like, ready to rock. But,
Yeah, that flapjack. He told us when the flapjack passed him. We actually had him on the living room show.
Yeah.
We were talking about, I don't think he wanted to talk about it too much, but right at the end, like, okay, let's talk about this 5K, you know? And then he said, like, you know, right where the flapjack caught up to him is on one of the hills. And then he just left him on the downhill or something like that. And then Gary's like, why wouldn't you just like lock in behind him and draft off him? It's a pancake. It's a flat, you know, like, cause for people listening, go look up at Eugene Marathon on Instagram. They have plenty of pictures of these flapjacks running. There's legitimate, like legit, like a mask, like a costume That's a really big round.
Yeah, here we go.
It's not aerodynamic at all. So the thing, the perfect draft.
Yeah, like,
literally might as well be like a break. Like is basically like he was running at an Ineos 159 challenge and couldn't beat a flapjack. But like, yeah, it's like it's really fun. And if you beat flapjack and flap Jill, so if women beat flapjack and men beat flap, well, you know what I mean, whatever. But, did I say it right? Yeah. I don't know. If you beat your respective flap, you get a year's supply of Krusty's pancake mix, because Krusty's,
that's why they do it, because we're talking about
Krusty's is a sponsor.
Free club. Here we Krusty's are. They do a great job.
Yeah, Krusty's
a
sponsor. And, but yeah, he lost. Tommy, I have a video of him coming down the chute, because I got my media pass. I'm in the finishing chute. I got the video. I see Joe just struggling. Flapjack is pushing hard. And I think maybe Joe must have slipped on some syrup or like butter that fell off the guy or something. I don't know.
They Tommy interviewed Ian, the race director, at the live show later in the day, and said, "How do you recruit these running pancakes?" And he's like, "You know, you got to find that young athlete that is fit enough, but also kind of ignorant.
Yeah, they don't know,
They're like, oh, I could do it and not know." Then I was talking to who is it? Someone later in the day was telling me, like, actually, in there, it's this big, you know, plastic pancake suit, and really the secret is you got one arm grabbing onto it and locking it in, and then your other arm is moving free. Otherwise, like, it'll just, if you try to move both arms, it's like flapping around and gets in your face. I'm like, there's a lot of science.
I just assumed it was like the Oregon, like, athletes, like,
I mean, it's probably something like that.
On the, because say this is track season, right? So if Shalane Flanagan's like, "Hey, you practice started 5 minutes ago. You're the flapjack."
The funny part about situation was, I think we were interviewing Ian, or maybe it was Joe or one of them, but we were talking about this thing, this moment. And then, oh yeah, it was Ian. And then he was like, "Well, actually, like one of our, you know, past," because they've never had anyone do it again. Because it's so hot. You get so hot. Like, Gary said he saw the guy take his suit off last year, and he said he was like drenched in there. Like, down, like, just fuck, like, just going crazy. And so Ian was like, the race director was like, "Yeah, we actually have one of our past flapjacks here." And I saw him smile as soon as he said it. And I was like, "Was it you? Were you the guy last year?" And then he's like, "Yeah, that was me." And I'm like, "You fed my kids for a year. Thank you so much." Because, like, that literally, I got to meet the guy who helped me feed my kids for a year. Because, and I guess, apparently, he had a really bad day. Like, he bombed, right? And so, they went way, like, this is real. They went way over budget on the pancakes that they legit, no, this is real. Yeah, like they gave way too many pancakes away last year.
Like, whoa.
Legit.
And the flapjack this year was hauling.
So Matt Centrowitz was the pancake this year. Like, we need to go 4 years with no one beating this guy.
Because the guy dropped, was a 17:40 something?
Oh, we should say, we keep saying guys, like, and then Jill, like the girl, and the women who beat,
they also
the
get
Jill
the same situation. And I think Flap Jill might have done like 20 and some change, like 20, and then I think Flapjack did 17:40 something for the 5K.
These wrinkles, they add something to the race, you know, the race within the race. Oh, wait, did I talk to you about this yet? Well, I was cheering with a friend, and we were sort of informally discussing subcategories. Like, she was like, that's the third fastest guy who has nipple chafing, like, who's actually bleeding through his shirt. And then this guy ran by, and I was like, man, I think that's the first guy to come by wearing a full t-shirt. Like, you know, so some rankings within the rankings. So I was like, there's number two with wired headphones. So it's you know, just like, you know, stunting out with your own little subcategory.
Yeah, and that one guy had on Old Hayward was better. That was the first guy that finished with a short sleeve t-shirt.
Todd was bringing the heat.
So I want to say, like, so I just want to, like, as I clarify, because I want to think about, like, what my fall looks like too. And I think other people do as well. So, like, benefits of smaller races, more control, right? Like, in the, you know, more control around, like, the situation, like, when you get there and all that stuff, less travel, hopefully, less pressure, I would assume, and more family oriented, probably.
Yeah, and I think part of the more control part is a subcategory of Mike and I talked about this on the podcast. It was like a year or two ago when he was really trying to go sub three. Remember, he had like a bunch of attempts at trying to go sub three. Was that when you do it at a local race, it would just be easier, right? You don't have less stuff going on in the weekend. You also can kind of dial in your own pace, especially early on in a race, as opposed to like being subject to the people around you. Like in Boston, sometimes that can mean, hey, I want to go faster, but I can't be weaving through all of these people. And the opposite can be true too, right? You can get swept up in the crowd and all of a sudden you're running faster than you want to. And that could be disastrous later on. So I think that while we saw some people like setting PRs at virtual races, like during COVID, was like, all right, no, I'm pacing myself. And part of that was like familiarity with the route. And then also like, it's just me out here. I can just kind of do my thing and not get swept up in the pomp and circumstance.
Yeah. And then before the race, you don't have to do like this. I mean, cause like the whole corral and transfer of the buses thing and being out there for 3 hours before your race start. I mean, that can be tough. You know, that's definitely
Matt, a Tommy sounds a little like he has
race bathroom situation. Bathroom situations at local races are usually better.
Better.
Just because
less people.
And because you can, especially if you're leaving from your house.
Fair.
Yeah, you legit need to, and as long as you wake up early enough and do your routine, you should be fine with the bulk of your work. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I like that. Exactly. I also think local race is key for, like, people who listen to this podcast, we, like, show up to races.
Oh, God.
What just happened?
The thing that we're gonna play. Never mind.
Oh, you're talking about the guy, the TikToker from Boston. Oh. Oh my God.
All right, go ahead. Sorry, man. Leave that in the pot.
All right, people who don't know, there was like this really like this thing on TikTok went viral. One of my friends sent it to me. It's the guy who's like, he's about to start the Boston Marathon. He's like, all right, Boston Marathon day. I'm so excited. Like, here we go. And then it like immediately goes to a clip. He goes, I'm in a porta potty, mile 14. There's no toilet paper in here. And he's like sweating profusely. And all of a sudden you can like hear what's happening in the porta potty. And then that's the end of the clip. Just those two parts. And it was like hysterical. It's crazy. And all of a sudden you just hear him yell, Oh God! And then it just goes black.
But that's life of a bigger marathon sometimes. But yeah.
I don't think I have anything to follow that. I was going to say it's kind of nice to run your local race around, you know, you see just random neighbors. You see that, you know, your dentist is like, oh, hey, Peter. And you're like, oh, I mean, we're not in New York City. We're just like running around town. And you see that friend from 10 years ago. And they're like, oh, I saw you out there. So it's like nice to bring to your home community your running passion as opposed to like only racing in these like far off locations. I think 100%. It's good to mix it up.
And then the plus of like big races is energy, man. Like, I mean, that's really it. Like I mean, really that's like the big marathon thing is if you're okay with energy, whether it's in the race, before the race, you know, after the race, around the race, all that, that's constant energy the whole weekend. And if you're down for that and you're ready to do it, it can be so much fun, you know?
It's a lot to take in. I mean, it's like, when I think about, it's good to have different experiences. You only go to the big events, then it's easy to lose sight of how insane New York City is. I mean, when I just think of what you ran through last year, Tommy, and like we were all over the course cheering for you, and it's like, what are we like? Is that even for real? It's just so insane. But if you go every year, you're like, yeah, you know, we got blah blah blah. But it's like, no, like you enter Central Park and sure you're tired, but like, what is going on? This is totally out of control. So,
Peter, that was great storytelling. You like yawned on command in the middle of that story.
Well,
that
was really yesterday. I don't want to disparage Eugene, but like I was biking with a woman. We had both run Boston, and it's like mile 25. And Eugene, you're going down this like sleepy concrete path by the river, and it's just like it's super picturesque for a picnic. I was like, Allison, this is not exactly Kenmore Square. Like this, you got to really bring the fire internally if you're going to be like 1 mile to go, kicking hard. I was cheering for Gary at mile 24 and a half, and we're by the river. It's sort of this corporate, the back of a corporate park. It's just a really quiet place. And I'm like, come on, Gary, you love this. let's go. But it's like,
you chose to do it again.
Yeah, yeah. You're here on purpose. You better stamp that ticket to the finish line. But it's like, no, these people were, it's like kind of tough when you can tell they're clearly like, I'm just trying to quietly suffer through this. Could you not cheer too loudly? Like, I just, I'm going to save my smiles for the finish line. But right now I'm just suffering.
Been there. Yeah. And I think the other thing too, is that like, you hear all these people having these really interesting experiences at these big races. And I think part of it's like, hey, I want to have that experience. Right. So I think there is that bucket list side of it of like, hey, one day I want to do X, Y, Z because I know all these people who do it and I want to be in that conversation. And it's kind of fun to commiserate. Right. And be like, hey, like, I can't wait to run Boston so I can talk to all my friends who also run Boston.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that like one thing that like, I guess because of this conversation, like if people like ask me questions about like getting ready for a major. I mean, no one calls me and says, how do I get ready for my local marathon? Like, it's, oh, I'm going to such and such. Like, anyway, what should I? I think that, like, one of the things that like, I'm taking from this is, like, you have to, because we spend a lot of money and a lot of time getting ready for major marathons and big races, and we travel and all this other stuff. And I think that some of the things, like, people tell us, oh, just get off your feet. But I think you have to make sure, like, you go in knowing that you're going to have to manage your energy for, you know, 4 days, and you're, and it's maybe not necessarily getting off your feet so much. It's more just about like remembering that you don't want to just be like expelling energy all weekend, like Friday, Saturday, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And then you get to Sunday and you think you're good. But at mile 10, you're just like, I don't know what's happening. You know, like what's going on. I did everything I was supposed to do. So it's like, it is a, you just have to throw like that disclaimer out there for those majors where it's not just the excitement of the race and not just like the your wave going out too fast. It's literally from when you land in Boston or wherever you go, it's energy like zapping immediately. Like you have to manage it. You have to be aware that that's happening and count and like figure out how to get around that.
And that's part of the control part. The first thing you mentioned was the control side, because like it's, you can't just say, well, then just don't go to those events, because it's also like the mental side of like, hey, all these people are doing cool stuff and I'm not doing it. That's not exactly the best mental prep either. It'd be like, look at all these people hanging out. I'm choosing not to do that. It's like, again, if that's your choice and you're fine with it, so be it, you know, like do your thing. But if you're like, I wish I was there, and you have like 3 days of FOMO while you just like are in Boston for the first time, and you're like, I might never be here again. Like, you kind of get stuck in this awkward
spot. Yeah, and that's what I was saying too. Like, isn't that maybe it's not even necessarily get off your feet? Because if you go, like, there's some people that probably go, I'd imagine that go to a New York, and that that's like their goal race. And they're like, you know, I'm not going to sacrifice my race that I trained for 3-4 months just to be somewhere doing such, you know, whatever. And they go, then like they leave. They maybe hit their goal or not or whatever. And then they leave and they're like missed the whole thing. And they're like, well, I didn't really get to experience that. So it's like, you got to try to figure out a way to like balance those, maybe plan the, you know, well ahead of time. Cause that's, I think a lot of the major marathon thing is those random, like, oh, let's go here. Let's go here. Let's go here. Then you're like kind of, then you're rolling around all day. But maybe if you like, you got to find that balance of like having fun and then like still having a decent race, but just really experiencing like those big major like weekends. Cause it is really fun. And that's why some people say, oh, it's probably way better to be a spectator like at a major than it is to run it. Cause you really get to experience the whole weekend. You just don't have to run 26 miles, but I think it's a ton of upsides for both. And I'd love to hear like what people's thoughts are, like which one they like the best.
Yeah. London sounds, I mean, I feel like a hypocrite because I tell people to conserve their energy and then I've never been to London, but if I went, I would want to do so many things. Everything. And I'm just like, how would I almost think I've resisted going to some of those. Cause I'm like, man, I would just want to do it so well and take it all in and then wrap it. And then I complexify, you know, I'm like, then I would want to bring some family and then maybe we'd wrap it into a vacation. And before I know it, I'm like, okay, no, I'll just sign up for something in America. So hopefully one of these days I have never raced abroad actually. I want to hear, we're going to try to get you, Tommy and Marcus on to compare and contrast. Now that you finished your 6-star, I want to hear about how they all compare and like, you know, highlights, lowlights, everything in between, tips for people who are considering, because there's just so many experiences. And I think the fact that they're all majors and like fast races, almost in my mind, and like the branding is starts to get similar, like it kind of like flattens how vastly different I'm sure these are. So I want to hear more about it.
No, yeah, for sure.
All right, this was a fun episode. All right, everybody, thank you so much for listening to Relay. Again, you guys saw this in Eugene. We've seen this at the major marathons. A lot of people are listening to these shows, and we really appreciate it. We get thousands and thousands of listeners for all these episodes. But that said, we have like 82 reviews on Apple Podcasts. Come on. If you've listened all the way to the end, you obviously like this podcast.
Review it.
So please just go give us a rating and review. We really appreciate it. That is for sure. So everybody, if you're training for a race, we hope it goes well. If you have some thoughts on what we said, go message us over on Instagram. And in the meantime, happy running.
Peace.